Well, we've heard today the Prime Minister announcing that a commissioner will be looking into the tragic toll of veteran suicides in the last 20 years. Now, this is largely as a result of the work of an Adelaide mum, Julianne Finney, who has been fighting for the past 12 months to try to see something done. That follows the death of her son, David. Now, she has managed to gather together 300,000 signatures, or almost 300,000, calling for a royal commission into the numbers of veterans who've died by their own hand, and which amounts to several hundred, between 400 and 500, since 2001. And just to put that into perspective, the figures suggest, certainly the figures in the Tyser that I was reading this morning, suggest that that is some nine times more people who've died at their own hand, veterans, than on the battlefields in the last 20 years fighting for Australia. So those figures, I think, by anyone's standards, are concerning. What is likely to be revealed as this commissioner? It's not just a royal commission. In fact, we'll get Tim White to explain this to us, but this commissioner will have ongoing powers, almost like a permanent royal commissioner, to be looking at this issue. Tim White is a partner at Tyndall Gask Bentley Lawyers. Tim, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sonia.
How long have you been looking into these kinds of cases?
I've probably been helping veterans or Defence Force members for 20-odd years in relation to a whole range of issues, but particularly injuries that they've suffered serving overseas or in Australia, or helping families where they've lost loved ones in conflicts or in operations in Australia. So it's been quite a diverse... The areas that I've worked in have been pretty diverse, so it's been helping people that have lost their lives or their family members and also people that have been injured.
And as you've been looking at those cases and working on those cases, did it become fairly apparent that, the suicide rates amongst returned veterans was high?
Well, there's a lot of psychological conditions that are caused by military service. So unlike, I suppose, a lot of other workforces, if we can call it that, there might be physical injuries, but not psychological injuries. Whereas from what I've seen, military personnel, probably not surprisingly, have a really high rate of psychological injuries that result from that service as well. So no doubt a factor that contributes to the high suicide rate, and the numbers that you just mentioned before are quite shocking, aren't they? I'm sure that that fact has a major contribution in veterans or current serving ADF members having a higher rate of suicide in comparison with the rest of the society.
And I guess we're not even talking about those who are experiencing difficulties or have been vulnerable in their fight to get help for their injuries, and who haven't taken it to that extreme.
No, from what I see, there's a whole range of different circumstances, but there's no doubt that the DVA, which is the compensation scheme that military people have to work through, is highly complex, and there's been endless numbers of reviews done on that scheme over the years, and the more recent one, which was in 2018, made some 20-odd recommendations about changes that needed to be made to that particular compensation scheme. And the gist of it was that it needed to be simplified. So there have been numerous suicides, and they've been reported in the media over the sort of time frame that you were just talking about, where people have taken their own lives whilst waiting for a decision to be made by the DVA. Now, that's certainly not all of them, and I'm sure there were multiple factors that resulted in, unfortunately, people taking their own life, but a theme that does come through is the complexity of the DVA system is something that is an unnecessary hurdle to a lot of military people.
Is the complexity of that system the issue, or the reasoning. By that I mean, is there a will for that to change and the system isn't just up to scratch, or is it that the system is in place so that DVA doesn't have to deal with it?
Well, I suspect what will come from this process, which is a positive step, it's just a first step on a very long road ahead with the commissioner being appointed in due course. But I suspect that what will come out is a lot of very difficult stories about people that have lost their lives in the course of making a claim with the DVA or waiting for a decision in relation to their claim, a whole myriad of circumstances. It obviously won't be the only set of circumstances, but I'm sure that that'll be a theme that will come out because of the complexity, the length of time it takes, the amount of paperwork that has to be put in, and how long it takes to obtain a decision, and the financial pressures that someone's in the meantime whilst they're waiting for a decision. Because often what happens is the military, not surprisingly, has very strict medical requirements in terms of what a person has to be able to do. And if you can't fulfil those requirements, whether that's because of a physical or a psychological injury, you're then discharged. And if you're medically discharged, your income stops. Well, if you're discharged either way, your income stops. And if it's a medical discharge because of a military-caused injury, you then have to go to a separate department, the DVA, Department of Veteran Affairs, and submit a claim. And it's not until that claim has been reviewed and assessed and then a decision is made that you might then be entitled to payments from the Department of Veteran Affairs. So there's often a gap, a lag between being removed from your workplace to then receiving any sort of financial assistance.
Tim, just to get some perspective, what sort of timeframes have you seen between lodging that application and getting that assessed and perhaps that money coming through?
It varies greatly, but and you know, at its worst, it can be years. Sometimes, for whatever reason, it all flows reasonably smoothly, but I wouldn't say quickly, but it can flow a lot quicker than that. But I've seen endless examples of where you are well over a year, 2 years, 3 years, sometimes longer, of no payments, and a person surviving, or a veteran surviving on Centrelink or other family support in the meantime.
Tim White from Tyndall-Gask Bentley Lawyers here on ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill. He's speaking with me, Sonia Feldhoff. Tim, when it comes to the numbers of people who are going through DVA, trying to get this kind of help, would you expect that there have been veterans who perhaps couldn't be bothered because they've heard the experience and these long waiting times and perhaps lacklustre results for many who've tried in the past?
Sure, I'm sure there is. The military community or the veteran community is fairly tight-knit and, you know, thankfully has some good networking support mechanisms. I'm sure people in that community talk. Well, they do. They talk to each other and there would be stories told about what the process is and the delay. So I've no doubt that there would be people that have avoided putting claims in for that very reason. And it is a big bubble. I mean that in the sense of some of the statistics say that since in the last 20 years approximately, the number of people that have served overseas well outweighs the number that served in Vietnam. So there's an estimate in the order of 80-odd thousand people that have served overseas in the last 20-odd years, whereas Vietnam was in the order of 60,000. So you have a very large number of people, the largest in our history, that have served overseas, which is usually where psychological injuries can arise because of the events that occur, obviously, while they're serving overseas.
So would you expect then, as a result of this announcement by the Prime Minister, that we will see more people opening up their cases and prepared to see whether this makes a difference?
I would expect so, and I hope if the if the Commissioner's office can process, I'm sure they'll be inundated, if they can process the information that they receive quickly, and that's there's some favourable steps taken by that office early on, then I hope that'll give people that haven't put claims in some confidence to then do so if they want to.
Mm. When the Commissioner is in place and looking into this, are you confident that this will have better results than a Royal Commission per se? I think the Prime Minister has described it as a sort of permanent Royal Commissioner almost, so that that can be assessed in an ongoing manner.
Yeah, but it's difficult to say till you know what the detail is about what powers they have and the number of staff that they have and the breadth of what they can look into. So, look, I hope so. It might be that this format allows more informality in the sense of people being able to put their stories forward, you know, in written form rather than having to have a formal hearing, which is often associated with a Royal Commission. So hopefully it will be able to gather information more quickly, but then it needs to obviously act and do make positive steps on that information. But it really depends on what powers they're given, which we don't, of course, know at the moment.
Mm. You're listening to Tim White from Tyndallgas Bentley. He is a lawyer who has worked with veterans living with PTSD or post-traumatic stress disorder, trying to deal with the Department of Veteran Affairs over the last 20 years or so, and how that might now be impacted with the announcement by the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, that a Royal Commissioner, an ongoing Royal Commissioner, will now be dealing with this, trying to make things better and looking at it. You might want to add your voice to this. Feel free to give us a ring. It's 21 minutes past two. Andy's in Golden Grove. Hi, Andy.
Hello, Sonia. Hello, Tim. Firstly, I'd like to say all of my sympathies go out to everybody that is hurting because of the Defence Forces over the last few years. But my question or comment isn't about what's happening now. You know, that's all to be dealt with by this commissioner. But I'm thinking that 25, even maybe going back a bit longer than that, the forces couldn't get recruits to come through the doors. So I think that the limits that before 30 years ago, a lot of people used to get knocked back for psychological problems. And I don't think over the last 30 years that has been looked at enough, and we are getting a lot of young men and young women going into the armed forces that really should have been rejected.
Oh, Andy, thanks for your call. Tim, do you want to make a comment about that?
Yeah, look, I know that I'm sure because of just the development of medicine that the scrutiny or assessments that are done now before you enter the military, I'm sure, are much more comprehensive than was done previously. I don't know if that means they're better, but you would hope it would, wouldn't you? I personally think, at least in more recent times, you know, 20 to 30 years, there's just been more international conflicts that Australia's been involved in. Obviously, you have the significant wars of, you know, the World War One and World War Two and many others, but in terms of the number of personnel that have participated from Australia in international conflicts, the numbers are greater in more recent times.
Mm. I would think too, we've only kind of given it a name and had a real understanding of post-traumatic stress disorder in relatively recent times. That doesn't mean that veterans beyond those years did not live and suffer from PTSD. We just perhaps didn't call it that at the time.
Absolutely. That's right.
And I think also we probably didn't measure you know, those deaths. We might have attributed it to alcoholism or something like that, when perhaps some who were suffering from that might have been self-medicating.
Absolutely. And look, there's some positive steps that have been taken by the DVA in terms of veterans and ADF members being able to access medical treatment for psychological conditions basically without charge or without having to have a claim accepted as it being military cause. So there's, over the last few years, there's been a number of announcements by whoever the government was at the time to assist ADF and veterans with getting access to treatment for mental health conditions. But the suicides have continued, so clearly enough is not still being done, and hopefully this information that's put forward will assist in reducing that horrendous activity that's occurring.
Eric, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. I want to make the comment that these service personnel are employed by the Commonwealth. So surely they'd be under the ComSec system, which is a lot simpler and faster.
Tim, that's an interesting point.
No, they're not under... There's two very different systems. If you're a military personnel, you're covered by a certain piece of legislation called the Military Rehabilitation Compensation Act, MRCA. If you're a civilian Commonwealth employee, you're covered by a separate act called the Safety Rehabilitation Compensation Act. So there are two very different laws, and they have very different means of operating. So no, you're not covered by the same laws. Military people are covered by quite a different system.
And is that a good distinction or not, in your view, Tim?
From what I've seen over the years, I think most of the time the military system's too complicated. It's unnecessarily paper-driven. So what I mean by that is there's a lot of forms that have to be completed, and it works, from what I've seen, much more slowly and inefficiently compared with what I see for the civilian Commonwealth employee.
Tim White, we thank you for joining us on the program today.
Sure, no worries, Sonia.
Tim is a partner at Tyndall Gask Bentley Lawyers and has over the last 20 years been dealing with the DVA on behalf of veterans. And he's expecting to uncover a lot of new people dealing with the department as a result of this decision, and hopefully a little bit more simply. Just on the text line, Hayden in Virginia says, great news from the PM's office. Hopefully one day it will extend to the police force and other emergency services too. Similar mental health issues and a lack of support there. And Deb says, veterans have always been made to jump through hoops with DVA. It's been going on for years and years. My father, no longer with us, was a veteran who lost his leg as a result of war. It was absolute hell for him trying to get help from DVA, a nightmare. He'd lost his leg and they were treating him like he was trying to pull a Swifty, even though the evidence, that is the lack of leg, was right in front of their eyes. The poor buggers who have to deal with that department, says Deb.